Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult. And that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the Juice Bags podcast. This podcast we are going to look basically as we run into the last Grand Slam of the year, the US Open. We are going to look at a couple of preview tournaments, one which has just concluded, the Canadian Open. We're also going to be looking ahead to the Cincinnati tournament and also the fallouts and in terms of rankings, in terms of injuries and what could potentially happen in the US Open. Joining me are our regular guests Shankar and Bijan. Shankar, let's get started with the Canadian Open, which has just concluded. You were insistent we should discuss the Canadian Open, and this is one of the premier tournaments leading up to the US Open. So let's look at the men's side. Finals, expected, not expected?
Svitolina won it. I think, like we spoke after Wimbledon, we're not very clear as to where the women's tour is going. Everyone said that Muguruza now has a good chance to stamp her presence on the tour, but I've also heard some people compare her to Wawrinka, where she only does well in the slams, because Wimbledon was her first win since she won the French Open last year. So the onus is on her to show that she can be more consistent. Pliskova is number one. Svitolina and Wozniacki reached the finals there, so those are two people who are probably looking forward to doing well at the US Open, and they both have a chance to become world number one at the tournament this week in Cincinnati. On the women's side. On the men's side, it's just been decimated with injuries. You know, Djokovic is out for the year. Wawrinka is out for the US Open, and I don't know if he's out for the year. Murray is out of Cincinnati. Cilic is out. He's the defending champion. He's out of Cincinnati. A few minutes ago, Federer pulled out of Cincinnati. I think he's protecting his back. So it's like a, I don't know, it's like a war zone in the men's tour. And I think now they have to find 128 fit men who can play in the US Open first before they worry about anything else.
Indeed. But let's look at the Canadian Open in specific though. So your overall, if you could give a brief summary about your views on how the Open went?
Yeah, I think the two stars from the Canadian Open, one was the 19-year-old Canadian Shapovalov, who beat Nadal and Del Potro quite impressively. I saw one of his matches, the match against Nadal, and he played really well. He's just, I mean, at that age, when you're fearless and you have that kind of shot-making talent, it's a lot of fun to watch. And he never gave up. He was down a set, came back. He was down in the finals at tiebreak against Nadal, and he didn't give up. And he played really well all the way through, I think. And he lost to the eventual champion Zverev, who was able to take out Federer in the finals as well. So those are my... Zverev is... All year, he's been one of the building stories. I mean, right from the Australian Open, where he pushed Nadal to 5 sets, and then he won Rome, beating Djokovic. So he's been getting better and better every tournament. He's, along with Federer, he's won the most tournaments this year. He's won 5 titles. He's only 20. So he's actually going to be going to Milan for the next-gen finals, as well as London for the for the Barclays, or the, I think this year they call the NITO final. So, yeah, so he's the big story. Zverev has made himself one of the short odds favorites for the US Open, I think, with this performance.
Bijan, you said before the pod that you didn't catch the whole tournament as it is. So, did you happen to watch the Nadal game where he got ousted ultimately?
Yeah, actually, I got the second half of the tournament in the last the weekend games is what I managed to catch. Nadal played a very solid first set. He won, and at a stage, I think he won 11 games out of 12. But then, visibly, while Shapovalov, while he upped his game a little bit, Nadal just tanked. There was this ridiculous switch up in level where it's almost like, you know, he felt a little bit of pressure, and then a lot of the cracked, which you haven't seen in a while. And then I think he was also visibly disappointed in the press conference immediately after, because he did say, I think, it was his worst game of 2017, because he was up again in the second set for a while. He was also fairly solid in the tiebreaker at a point in time where you don't expect him to break. But I think his second and third sets were probably the poorest you've seen all year. And that obviously, you know, he was visibly disappointed in the best. But not to take away that the little kid just performed incredible.
Shankar, getting back to, let's focus on the Nadal game, obviously, with you on the panel. So, what do you attribute this? You can't call it downturn, but it was nowhere near his level, which he's shown this year. What do you attribute it to? Was it just one bad day in the office, or was it coming? Usually, when Nadal loses, you usually say it's coming. So, this time, what's your take on the loss?
Well, I hope it's one bad day in the office. But the truth is, he has, for all his great fighting qualities and his indomitable spirit, he loses a lot of close matches, I'll say. Over the last few years, he has lost quite a few matches in deciders. And that third set, I think he had a lot of opportunities. He had break points. There was one game that went 14 minutes or 20 minutes or so. And then, again, in the third set tiebreak, he was up 3-love. So, it was uncharacteristic that he didn't put him away. And I believe it may just be that he's coming back to hard courts and this is his first tournament back. And that kid, when you're 18, the way they play is they only play first strike tennis. They have nothing to lose. They go for winners of every shot, and credit to them if it comes off. I think that's what it is. So I think it's one off, but Nadal is obviously more susceptible on hard courts than he is on clay. And he hasn't won a tournament outside clay in a long time. That's a factor too.
Shankar, I'm going to stick with... Yeah, sorry, Bijan, you had something to say?
Sorry. Yeah, if I may. The other thing that I noticed was Shapovalova's, and I saw this stat somewhere, I can't find it unfortunately right now, is that Shapovalova increased the pace of some of his ground strokes as well. And in the shorter format of the ATP, you've always seen that a faster court kind of troubles Nadal a little bit, plus it's also a quick format, so he can't really push it towards the end in test physicalities, right? So, yeah, I mean, Shankar's right to say that he hasn't won a tournament outside of the ones that he mentioned this year and for a while. But it was also a case of, I think it was just one of those things where he cracked it was a drastic drip rather than, you know, him being able to fight it out. Versus what you saw versus against Muller at Wimbledon is that Muller's game just didn't break. It was a freak game. You very rarely see that. And Nadal had to try things, which is why he kind of broke. This was just, you know, nothing is working. The game's sinking even more. I'm just going to stay in it because I think I can. And then he just kind of got bulldozed at the end.
Yeah, Nadal's more susceptible to this kind of defeat in best of three sets rather than best of five sets, where he always, very more often, he'll find a way.
Yeah.
And Shankar, what is it between 3 and 5, if I could just prolong this? Do you think he needs time to maybe break down his opponent, and 3 sets is too short? Is that your thought process on this?
Yes, I think his game is suited to grinding down an opponent. Federer and Sampras play very clinical tennis. They can decimate an opponent who will feel like he had no chance. But Nadal will like a spider with a web, he'll pull you into they'll be trading ground strokes, and he'll just constantly pound you and pound you. And the way he wins the first point of a game or the first 2 points of the game will affect a player later on in the set. And him and Djokovic both have this ability to grind down their opponents. And the longer matches favor them because they are fitter than most people, and they just know how to play better in the key points on a four set or a five set match. In three sets, it's possible to have a dip and then suddenly you're set in a breakdown and that's it, bye-bye. So that's why he's a little more susceptible in three sets. And plus, he doesn't have a weapon like a serve. Like Federer can really, even if he's a little off on his game, he can still serve through a set, take it to a tiebreak. But Nadal, if you see, usually has to work a lot to win even his service games. And so that means he's more susceptible in a three-set match.
John, would you want to add anything on to that?
Yeah, just the last point, but Shankar kind of already dipped into it, is that the shorter form point will always help a bigger server because you get free points. Remember in a five set, when the last set can go on till kingdom come, your defensive game can always keep you in it. But if it's going to a tie break, it'll always help the bigger server and always help the person serving first. So you've seen this time and time again, that whenever he's gone into tiebreakers and he's not serving first, there is a little bit of an issue. So if it goes on to the fifth set, then you can continue and keep going on. Like, there are not too many people that can take on 100% full fit in the Nadal. But in a shorter format, if it goes to a tiebreaker, it'll always benefit someone who's got a bigger serve. And Nadal's made to his serve, right? Because of his wrist and the knee. There have been adjustments, and more so on the hard. So they'll always benefit a bigger server, and that's also what Shankar touched on, the difference between a three and a five.
All fair points. Bijan, I'm going to stick to you. Let's move from Nadal to the other Hall of Famer, Federer. Did you manage to catch the final against Zverev?
Yes, I did. It was unbelievable. The first set was just... It reminded me of... Do you remember the Del Potro US Open that he won, where he just looked like he was unbeatable? Zverev reminded me a lot of that, but just faster, which is really scary if you have someone who can cover ground better than Del Potro, but has the big ground strokes, has the big serve, has absolutely everything. You know, he was on wheels, he was defending incredibly well. There's this, I think they put up this clip multiple times, the Rogers Club Twitter account, where it's one defense and Federer finally puts the ball out in play. But it was unbelievable. Zverev in the first set. Second set, I do believe that the injury or the back kind of gave in a little bit. There was some instances that you kind of saw. I wouldn't say Fed was tired, but there was some kind of issue. But in the first set, it was all Zverev just... It was almost like he didn't care two hoots about reputation. He didn't care anything to do with, he said, it was just, this is my time. This is the final for me to give in. To just make sure that I don't give in. And he went for it. And he was physical. He served well. He covered incredible ground. Tactically, he was very, very good. I was very impressed with that final.
Shankar, you want to add on to what Bijan said about the final? What was your take on the final? We discussed that Zverev is a... You said it is the breakthrough story of the year, as won as many tournaments as Federer. So it's fair to say the final was between the best two players on the tour this year, right?
No. Well, if you give slams more weightage and masters more weightage, then you'll still have to say that the best two players of the year have been Nadal and Federer. But they were definitely the best two players of the tournament. And Zverev has reached a level where, playing against these guys, he doesn't feel he's the underdog anymore. I mean, he'll say it in the press. He'll say, sure, Federer's the favorite and all that. But he's played all of them so many times this year. He lost to Nadal in Australia. He lost to Nadal in Monte Carlo. And then immediately he went and played in Barcelona to play him again. But I think he lost before that. And then he beat Djokovic at Rome. He lost to Federer in Halle, and he keeps learning, he keeps getting better and better. And that first set was very good tennis. He really overpowered Federer in some ways. And I think somewhere at 2-2 or 3-3 in the second set, Federer started pulling back. And the commentators could see it. Everybody could see it. There was this long rally where he had to run side to side. And then after that, he must have hurt something in his back and said, it's not worth risking the US Open for this. And from there, you knew that Zverev was going to get through. To take no credit away from Zverev, he's definitely the future of the game. I think now the question is, maybe he's also the present of the game. Yeah.
That's indeed an interesting take, saying that he's the future or he's also the present. So let's move on to Cincinnati. Shankar, we said in the beginning of the pod, we could literally count the number of fit players in our hands who want to play in Cincinnati and who also want to play the US Open. So how do this? Let's put ourselves in the shoes of the organizer. How do they salvage such a tournament? You have literally no one playing.
Yeah, the big story is that Nadal is going to be number one. Even if he loses in the second round at Cincinnati, he's still going to be number one because he's got enough points. Murray is going to lose points from last year. Federer is not going to gain any points. But that's a very lukewarm way to have a story around a tournament. So and given Nadal's struggles on faster courts, and Cincinnati is one of the faster courts, we could have the first Masters tournament in a long time that's where none of the big four are there in the finals. I mean, there's only one of the big four playing, so there's very good odds that you could. I mean, you can. This is like the women's tour now. Cincinnati, anybody could play anybody. I mean, Zverev is obviously one of the favorites now. Nadal has a reasonable draw. I think he can do well. I mean, he has Kyrgios in his half, so that's a bit of a risk for him. But apart from that, I think he should do well. And one would expect Zverev to reach the finals from his half. So it's whenever there's the passing of the guard, the changing of the guard in tennis, you might have a few tournaments where you can't really build up a good narrative before the tournament. Your story only comes after the tournament because there are half a dozen people who could win this tournament if they chose to play well. You'd go with the form book, but like I said, that doesn't promise anything.
Bijan, coming to you. Cincinnati, Nadal, second round is Shankar would say don't jinx it, but second round is basically a formality. So we are looking at a new number one. Murray is out. Federer wants to protect himself for the US Open. Djokovic is obviously out for the year. So where do you see this as a precursor to the US Open? Where do you see this tournament heading?
So I look at it. I look at it two ways. One, it doesn't change Nadal's ranking at all going into the US Open, right? So now, the thing that could be interesting is that if he could just use this tournament as maybe if he wants to correct a couple of things or try a couple of things, and then if he wins it great, because the ranking doesn't get affected. Obviously, the more match time he gets in a faster court, the better for him at the US Open. But I do think a lot of the others will take it really seriously because A, it's a chance to win a Masters, B, it does affect a number of rankings for anyone that I believe is between 10 and 15. So that could always be an advantage for them. But because it's only him, I think it'll just be one of those I win it, and then grab the people. So that's what I think it would. And if he goes out, I don't think it should hit him that much. But obviously, these guys are too competitive. They want to win everything that they end up. So as a precursor of the US Open, I guess it'll just be practice. I would actually see Zverev as a favorite only because I think his game style is just suited for the faster. He's got everything. You know, it's a really attacking style, which is just Del Potro 2.0 in a way. So I guess it will suit his method and his tactics and his ability. But it'll be fun. It'll be fun for everyone that's not Nadal. If he wins it, he wins it, and then kind of move in, focus on the future.
So Shankar, is it worth looking? Now we have looked at both the tournaments. Nadal is going to be number one. So let's look at the precursor. Let's look at the US Open as the tournament, which is the big tournament, and we have talked the precursor. So considering the form book or the injury book, are there any early favorites for the US Open? Because Nadal is going to be one who's played both tournaments. Zverev looks to be one. Federer has played one, made a final. Djokovic is obviously out. Any news? I have not followed any news on Murray. Is he going to be there for the US Open?
There's no update on Murray yet. He's trying, but even if he plays, I don't think he can skip the whole summer and then expect to be a favorite at the US Open.
But is he Nadal, even going to play?
He hasn't said so yet. So he's taking it week by week. First he said, I'm pulling out of Canada. And then he said, I'm pulling out of Cincinnati. So he'll only probably make an announcement next week or the weekend before the US Open. Nadal needs to do well in Cincinnati because he lost very early in Montreal. He lost his second match. He beat Bernard Coric and then he lost to this other guy. So he needs to get a few matches under his belt, even though the surfaces are different. He does need that. He might have an interesting match against Giles Mueller in third round. He'll remember him. So that should be interesting. That could be painful again, but he could have Kyrgios. But I think Nadal needs to win at least two or three matches, maybe get to the semis to feel that he has a little bit of match play going into the US Open. Otherwise, he's going to be a little undercooked on hard courts, even though he's the top seed. Best of five sets again at the US Open. He'll back himself to work his way into the tournament. But if you had to, if Federer is just protecting himself, and hopefully his injury is not serious, then Federer and Zverev will be justifiably the favorites for the US Open. You know, they have the game, they have the know-how to play, and Zverev, I mean, we still have to see how Zverev does in multiple five-setters. But he must be top of the world right now. He's got to be thinking that nothing can stop him. What does he have to be afraid of, really? I mean, Roger Federer was the immovable force all year, and he's taken him apart. He beat Djokovic on clay, so he's got to be very confident. And with good reason. Like Bjorn said, his game is quite frighteningly good. So, yeah. I think outside Federer and Zverev, and then Nadal, because he's fit, and when Nadal is injury-free, he will always make a good run. He's not going to lose to a Fognini or a Lucas Pouille this year, that's for sure. So it should be them, and then whoever else takes their chances at the US Open. I don't even know who to look for, really, to be honest with you. I would like to say someone like Kyrgios, because this year he has shown a few more signs of being more committed. And if he's injury-free, he should go deep. But again, you'd be really foolish to bet on Kyrgios. That means you have a lot of money to spare. So nobody else has credentials. So we could have Federer, Nadal, and Del Potro. Only three men in the singles who have slam titles. I think that's what it's going to be like. Because Wawrinka's out, Murray may not play, Djokovic is out. So again, it's a very open field, I think. Emphasis on open.
It almost looks like we are discussing the women's side.
Exactly. I was going to say, I didn't want to use the word Serena, but yeah, it's something like that now, yeah.
Bijan, you want to add on to what Shankar just said about how the US Open could potentially look like how the women's side has been looking the whole of this year?
No, I think it's going to be those three plus Del Potro. Only because I think Del Potro will take Cincinnati very seriously. And then it's a hard court. If he can stay fit, if he's confident, then it's those four. Only because the others just aren't available. And I don't think Dominic Thiem has the best game for the hard court. So he's obviously lower down the pecking order. Songa, no. Kevin Anderson's back. He's had a great run, but his first Grand Slam in a while. I don't think that's going to be something that people will worry about. Big serve, of course, but then fitness concerns over five sets. Nishikori is the perennial quarterfinalist. I don't think that moves from there. Maybe
now. Nishikori is not playing Cincinnati. He's also injured, by the way. He's replaced by Tipsarevic, so we don't know if he's going to be at the US Open either.
Oh, fair enough. So that's another one. Mofields just lost to Yuki Bamri. That shouldn't do him too much confidence. But I don't know. It just seems like those three, plus maybe the odd one. So yeah, it is. I'm not going to say women's game because also then you've still got Nadal, Zverev, Federer. And that hasn't been the case in the women's game comparatively at all. But yeah, it is wide open till and it's these, I think it's for them three to lose in a way. And after this, honestly, if I had to put it out there, Federer over Zverev over Nadal, only because the game style suit the other two. That's it. That'll probably be my call for the US Open, the men's.
Shankar, anything we want to discuss on the women's side, we'll ultimately actually discuss that also.
I don't know. I want to pick Zverev, but I'm worried that once I pick him, he'll lose first round. So I'll stay away from picking him. I've done enough damage to his French Open chances. So yeah. But the women's side, well, yeah. I don't know, man. The men are so wounded. I don't know about the women's side. What has Wimbledon taught us? It's taught us that Muguruza can win a Grand Slam, which we already knew, right? So the contenders continue to be contenders. Svitolina did well. Halep did well. Wozniacki always tries hard. She did well. Venus Williams reached the quarterfinals, so that's
Wozniacki
good.
Did Wozniacki beat Pliskova?
Yes.
She beat Pliskova, and Svitolina beat Halep 6-1, 6-1. I'm not sure what happened there. I don't think Halep's ever lost 6-1, 6-1, but they're all on curves, up and down. And Muguruza reached the quarters, so she also did well. So, again, it's open season in tennis.
With men's side, you could argue injuries, but women's side, it's just pure yo-yo effect, though. It's like 1 week somebody is awesome, next week they are down in the dumps.
Yeah, but I think it's going to be among that. There's a pool of five or six, I would say now. I would say Pliskova, Halep, Svitolina, Muguruza, and maybe Konta. One of them would be the favorites, I think, but reasonably. I think. But the good thing about the women's tour now is that nobody has to be intimidated about anybody else. There's no giant like Serena who comes in and, you know, tilts the whole draw. So they all will go in thinking they can win. And if, as we saw in Wimbledon, it led to a lot of close matches because nobody gave up in any match because nobody was thinking, if I win this match, I get to the next round. They're all thinking, yeah, I can go really deep in this tournament. And I think that's what they're going to do on hard courts. Konta did very well at the US Open a couple of years ago. And Pliskova, of course, last year reached the finals. So I think they're all good on hard courts. It should be another cracker of a women's tournament. With the big names, probably. Well, they're not big names, but the medium-sized top names doing well, I think.
John, any early favorites? We struggle to even name favorites when it's the weekend before the Open, but early favorites, yeah. If there are any.
I know. But no, interestingly, that Shankar mentions Konta, because Konta went out really early in the Rogers Cup. She had a bit of a bad one. But I think Svetlana beat everyone, right? So she beat Muguruza in the quarters, then she beat Halep in the semis. And then she went on to beat Wozniacki, I think, in the final. Yeah, it was Wozniacki in the final.
Correct.
I think this is also, interestingly, I think it's Wozniacki's fifth or sixth final this year. I think it's one of those numbers. Maybe fourth or fifth or fifth or sixth. But she's done really well through the year, obviously, because unfortunately she just doesn't have the biggest game to close games out. And she needs to grind it out and stretch it. If she has a couple of really long, really, really long games, then it becomes a lot harder for her to do. But she had a great tournament. She beat Pliskova. Sloane Stephens made a return really well this tournament. She eventually lost to Wozniacki in the semis, I think. But I think I thought Sloane Stephens was great when she broke out of the scene. She's come back. Hopefully she can stay there. She does have an incredibly, incredibly quick game. So that's a good sight for her to return as well. I'd just add one list, one name to that list. My mind would be probably Wozniacki over Konta, only because just her form through the years has become better.
Yeah, the reason I didn't include Wozniacki is because she has the same problem that Hingis used to have when both the Williams sisters were dominating, is that she cannot overpower anyone. So over seven matches, she'll get found out, I think.
Yes.
She might be able to beat one of these big girls, then she'll get stuck against someone else. All the others, except for Halep, who has incredible fitness and retrieving game, all the others have big weapons and they can, pound winners.
Yeah.
So that's why I think Wozniacki to go deep, yes, but Wozniacki to win, no, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Agreed there. I think it's going to be the same, like you said, it'll be Halep, Svitolina, Muguruza, Pliskova, but then Pliskova is again, I think she's going to compete with being a really nice. She's going to be another horrible world number one. But then we give up on those rankings, don't, because it's not someone who's actually winning it. It's just that people are losing it, which is why another one becomes a world number one. And I find that a very weird combination. Like here on the men's side, Nadal's won tournaments through the year. Federer's won tournaments through the year. They're kind of chasing Murray, who's unfortunately injured. And the women's game is just that, you know, people get to the semis, they do, and then they lose, and then someone else becomes. I think it's just, it's odd. It's a very odd. I think Serena back.
Yeah, she lost in the second round of Wimbledon to become world number one. So that was good for Pliskova. She got a week and a half off, and she also became world number one.
Absolutely.
It's a good deal, right? It's weird,
And we stated, and the first time we actually saw this happen was years ago with Wozniacki and Yankovic. Because they hadn't won tournaments to become world number one is when there were injuries and then they kind of went deep in the tournament. So they were just gaining points. And it was the same thing. And since then, it hasn't really changed much.
They were just the most consistent.
Absolutely.
I think now we're seeing a changing of the guard. Even if Serena comes back next year, she's not going to be as dominant as she has been. I think that's a given.
Please record this.
It would be unbelievable. Yeah, record it. I'll write it. No problem. She's not going to be as consistent as she was. She's probably going to pick and choose her slams like Federer does. She's still good enough to maybe win Wimbledon and stuff like that. But something will have to give. She's having a baby, for crying out loud. I mean, yes. Clijsters did it, but Clijsters was much younger. Serena's already 34 or 35, right? 34.
Yeah. Like Clijsters did it, she was younger, but Serena is, I mean, for the lack of a better adjective, Serena.
You know, I have more respect for Serena than anybody on the planet, but I still think when she comes back, she's not going to... I mean, it's a very safe thing to say. She's definitely not going to win 23 more slams, so she's not going to be as dominant, right? So I don't think she's going to come back and just take over the number one slot. But if that serve works, then I don't know. She could.
I have a feeling in third gear, she might still be too good for most of them.
I'm not sure about that anymore. I think the year that's going to happen, she's not going to come back before the French Open next year. And I doubt she's going to play Paris immediately back. She'll probably be able to.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I think she bunks the French Open just because it's just too physically demanding.
Yeah, so a couple of girls by then will have some sort of, they'll have more feathers in there and they'll be more confident and they don't take a backward step. I mean, Muguruza beat her twice at Paris, right? So she has that confidence too. So, yeah. I would expect one of these to kind of grab on to number one within a year with some reasonable case. Kerber has two slams, Muguruza has two slams, so somebody has to kind of up the ante here, you know. One of them has to go further. Or Kerber is not going to get back to where she was last year, I think. Even though she's only 29. Something in her game is lost this year.
Let's not forget the lone warrior as Venus gloves on.
Yes.
Yeah,
this is a good chance where she's looked good all year here. I mean, we talked about Nadal and Federer, but she's reached two slam finals, so that's nothing to laugh about, right? And she's actually done it. We're talking about Federer winning a slam after 4 years and Nadal winning a slam after 2.5 years. But she reached the Australian Open finals this year after she reached it in 2002, which was before Nadal, before Federer even won a slam. So we're talking about longevity on a ridiculous scale here. So she's fit. She is always confident.
She's a big tournament player, nothing like her.
Exactly, yeah. She's a big match player. So, and there are days when she's played where the only person who could have beaten her was Serena, and it was Serena. So, I mean, she will always be a favorite in New York. And
home tournaments.
I'd love to see her win. Absolutely, sure.
Because I was going to say she's my dark horse, actually. That's why I was waiting to see if any of you pick her up. I was waiting because she's my dark horse pick for the US Open home tournament. She's been on form. She's handled herself well. She's not got injured. You could say she's struck a fine balance between playing enough to stay in rhythm and not playing so much more that she gets tired or exhausted. She's struck a nice balance. So I think she's on form for the year. And there's a possibility.
Yeah. I was very surprised and disappointed with the way she lost that second set in the Wimbledon final. I was not surprised when she lost to Serena in Australia. I mean, that was on the cards. It wasn't a shock that she lost to Muguruza, but the way she lost was kind of puzzling, I guess. If it was fatigue, then that's a worry. But if it wasn't fatigue, that's an even bigger worry. So if she can avoid that kind of mental dips, then she'll be fine, I think.
But Shankar, just to ask, do you think, because I thought that the first set was so intense, the stress around the first set in the Wimbledon final, I think Garbine just stuck it out a little long, because if you notice in the second set is when she went for everything, you know. And I think the first set, just in terms of a stress point of view, and physically, just took out too much of Venus Williams. And then I don't, you know,
I think
Rafi that final rather than, you know, Venus losing it.
No, I think so, yes. But I for a person with that much slam experience, who's won 5 Wimbledons, who won that great 9-7 final against Davenport, that was 10 years ago, I think. So she has experience in big matches, she has experience in long matches. She's definitely not the kind of person to drop her head just because she lost a set in a final.
It's also a 15-year age gap, no?
Yeah, so I don't know if it's age. If it's fitness, I don't know if it's... If it is fitness, then the same thing is going to happen in New York. It's summer, it's going to be September, it's going to be hot. So then she's in trouble again, right? If that's the case. So she has to win and win easily? I don't know. I don't think it should have been fitness. It should not have been. It shouldn't have been for her, for the level she's playing and how good she is. Her matches haven't gone super long, like 2.5 hours, like Halep matches and all that stuff. So I just think she blinked somehow for some reason. I mean, we can't understand the minds of these top players. So, but it was, to me, it was a slip on her side to lose that second set so tamely.
Yeah.
But nothing to take away. Imagine we are talking Venus Williams and Lindsay Davenport, and now Venus Williams and Pliskova.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, God, she's my second favorite women's tennis player of all time. So, I mean, it's fine. Ooh. I mean, I'd love to see her come back and win. After Sellers, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, any other last points before we close the pod, Shankar? Any other points you wanted to discuss, because it's been a while since we did a pod?
I don't know. I'm quite excited about this US Open because I think it's going to be fun from day one. It's a sea change from when we knew that these four guys would roll into the quarters and everybody else would just have matches against each other to see who could lose to one of the big four. So I don't think Nadal is going to win it. I think Federer or Zverev will have a better chance and one of them might win it. I also think, I'll say it now, I think Nadal will be number one next week, but Federer is going to take the number one ranking at some point this year. I think he plays well indoors. He's the best indoor player in the world now that Djokovic is injured. And he'll probably end the year as number one, because he's got no points to protect, and if he's fit, and he should do very well in all the tournaments to follow.
But we have known that the US Open is tournament which throws up favorites, at least in the throws up underdogs and they end up winning. That's a tournament, at least in my watching of tennis, US Open is the tournament I associate with shock winners. So
really, I mean, it doesn't happen that much if you look at it in the last, I don't
Cilic.
Know since 2003, Del Potro and Cilic are the only guys who've won it outside.
Yeah, my first memory of US Open on shock was Marat Safin.
Yes, I saw that. I woke up
2000
in the morning. Yeah, 2000. I watched that. And that was, I mean, Sampras was blown away, seriously. Safin had too much power and too much game. And Sampras was very generous in defeat. And I was stunned. I woke up thinking Sampras is going to roll over this no-name Russian guy and nothing doing. He completely got destroyed. Yeah.
Sampras,
and then the next year, Hewitt.
Safin is just one of the most infuriating individuals to watch. Because he should have at least got to 5-7 Grand Slams. Like, just his talent demanded that at least. And he only got
He was too busy having fun. He was just too busy having fun.
No, but the one thing was, you know, okay, you know, new kid on the block, blew apart Sampras. But for him to have taken out Federer in the Australian Open the way he did when Federer was at peak level, right, just showed you how ridiculous his career has been when he should have just done so much more.
Yeah, that was a very close match. I think Federer had match point, but that was how well Safin could play if he was focused and everything was in place.
He did.
That's all. But his temperament is such that he cannot do that week in, week out. I mean, to ask him to be like that is to ask him to be somebody else. I mean, take them for what they are.
Quick short story. I don't know if you guys have ever seen the IPTL live, but I've gone there both years that they have come in. And the first year, Safin was there. Oh, God, you should have seen him throwing tantrums. on the court, right, when he wasn't doing well, when he wasn't serving too great, it was incredible. It was just reminiscent of what he had been doing his entire career, and he kept doing that in an exhibition game. You know, he'd try to go for the big serve, but obviously hasn't played tennis in ages, would miss it by miles, and then he would actually suck. And I was sitting there, said, this is the best, you know, amount of money I've ever spent, because I've seen everything. I've seen competition, I've seen the favorite players, and I've also seen tantrums in the likes of Sachin. It was hilarious to watch.
But
it's almost like I hadn't missed out anything in the past 20 years.
But one player who reminds me, sorry Shankar, but one player who reminds me of Sachin, not obviously to the same talent ceiling, but just sheer frustrating inconsistency, is Milos Raonic. If he wants, that guy can be great. And it's almost like he doesn't want to do it.
Raonic, he has to convince me. He has the game. I mean, I've
exactly.
seen him make great, but he's mentally not there. Every time he plays against these big names, he blinks first. I mean, I'm sorry. You can see he'll play Murray or Djokovic or Nadal or Federer. And first set, four games, he'll serve lights out. And one of the five games, he'll drop his serve pretty kind of predictably. The moment the ball comes back over the net, he's floundering. He looks very weak for one game. And he has the same issues that I see in Dimitrov. You know, they don't seem to want to beat these top guys. Or somewhere deep in them, they don't really believe it all the time.
Exactly. And that's what I was saying. It's almost like he doesn't want to do well himself.
Yeah, I think he's kind of just holding himself. I don't know what he's... This year, he's had a lot of injuries. Fair enough. But his defeats are quite predictable. Yeah.
But it just shows you how much of the game is actually in the mind. You know, I thought his coming of age was when he beat Federer at Wimbledon, and then he just got wiped in the final, which was just such an anticlimax, because he played a fantastic game against Federer. It was tactically so good, but then he just hasn't been able to replicate that at all. And it's almost like the big guys know that his serve is going to break at some point, which is why Federer just doesn't bother. And we saw that at this Wimbledon as well. He knew that come game 9, the serve would break, because he would get tense, and then that's when Federer would get tense. It just needs, I think it so much for him will just be mental. And I think if he gets to, you know, accidentally win a Grand Slam in the next year or so, I think that could be a big change in his approach.
No, last year Federer was a little bit injured. He was coming in a bit match shy. But I don't think Raonic is going to be a great player. So I think, Srikanth, you need to look at somebody else for
I would say
we all jump on the Zverev wagon, because he's probably going to win 10 slams in the next 5 years. Okay, so there, I've jinxed him. He's done. He won't win anything for the rest of his life. Poor guy. Yeah, he'll search me out. No, Zverev is the real deal. There's no question. I think he's in it for the long haul.
So, I was coming to Shankar. Do you think he's an all-quota? That is, he's a contender in all slams?
Yes,
already?
I do. His game is very tight. He's good on clay. He's good on hard courts. He's reasonably good on grass. He had a great chance to beat Raonic at Wimbledon this year. He was up a set and a break, and he lost serve because of just inexperience, kind of, and he let it go. But with one more year of experience, he'll be good. And he has a very good serve. So, yeah. I think he'll be good on all surfaces.
Interesting. Because we remember when we did the French Open, when we got back to Wales, we kept talking TM.
Yeah. Oh, Zverev lost in the first round. Void by my prediction that he would win. He went out in the first round. Team is better on clay. The team doesn't... He has his swings are too big for other surfaces for him to be... have as much of an impact. I'm sure he'll find a way. I'm sure his coaches are working on it and all that. But Zverev's game is much more together and much more advanced or sophisticated than teams, I would say. God, he's only 20 here. I mean, the mind boggles at what he could do.
Bijan, you wanted to discuss something in specific, right?
Yeah, I'm going to put both of you on the spot now, and I'm going to ask you. So, we've seen this now happen twice, right? Federer took a certain period off, came back this year, won 2 out of 3 slams. Nadal's took time off to obviously work on his wrist, but then was injury-free, came back, one final, one slam win. You've potentially got Wawrinka out for the entire season. I think he's done. Djokovic is out for the entire season. Murray could potentially also miss the rest of the season. Do you think, and mind you, all of these guys are above 30, right? And honestly, it would suck to be someone at the age of 20, 24, 25, because these guys are just not going away. Now, do you think that this could be a format where, because they've got so many points on them, missing the odd slam to take a break becomes just something they will do tactically to approach the next couple of years? Because it's easier on their system, they can pick and choose what works for them. So, do you think someone could actually, or any of these guys could look at the next couple of years and say, let me not do four slams a year, let me do maybe three and then see if, and then, because let's be honest, right? I don't think, other than Nadal, who sometimes suffers if his seed isn't that high, the other three are really, really good against the bottom half or the bottom 100, therefore tend to get beaten much more often. Would that change if they dropped out from, say, the first four to the second four seeds, and then use that as a format to approach the next couple of years?
I'll go first. I don't think Federer is going to play the French Open next year, because I can't see him finding one reason to play the clay court season. If he has to play Paris, he has to play the clay court season. Then he has to run up against these teams and Zverevs and Nadals. I mean, the reward versus effort is not worth it for him. I do not think Murray or Djokovic are there where they want to start skipping slams yet. I think Djokovic is genuinely injured. He's kind of hit the wall. But he's not just injured. He's also mentally shot. So he has to find a way to come back. And the fact that he hired Agassi and he hired Ancic are good signs that he really wants to get his game back on gear. So I think Djokovic will come back next year. I don't think he'll win the first two slams for sure. I think he might start doing well after a few months of play. And Murray, I don't think he's won enough slams to start picking and choosing. I don't think he's at that stage. One of the things that helped Federer was, like he said after Wimbledon, he said he was very happy with 17. He came in, you know, his career was already great. I mean, it was already GOAT career. I mean, so he said it very clearly. He did not take off the second half of last year because he felt like it. He took it off because he had to. He was injured. He only played Wimbledon because it was Wimbledon. And good as he is, even half injured, he could still make the semis. Good for him. So yeah, I don't think these guys are going to do it. I think Federer will skip French next year. But the other guys, I think, as they get fitter, they'll play slams. They might look at the possibility of playing less tournaments, though, given how much of a toll they've had on their bodies. But I don't think the slams. I think they'll all show up for the slams.
What you're saying is they show up for the slams, don't play enough tournaments, potentially lose seeding a little bit, but in and around the slams, all four of them.
Well, yeah, you just said Federer not at Paris. Yeah. Yeah, the other guys are going to play the slams because they will still back themselves to win the first three rounds, whether they're ranked 2 or 5 or 8. And I don't think they'll go that far down. The level of tennis will get to a high enough level. If they want to be a contender at a slam, then they also have to be doing well enough at the Masters tournaments they choose to play in.
Fair enough. Sri?
Yeah, I would think so. Except Federer, I don't see others skipping tournaments. They aren't at that stage yet. And the problem is, if the other argument is obviously, if you want to play a slam, you cannot go cold into a slam. You will need to play a few tournaments and there are points at stake. So except Federer, I think Federer is at a stage it's not going to pinch him. He doesn't need slam, but for others, it might be an opportunity to win a slam. Federer is not interested in winning the French Open because, as Shankar said, the effort versus reward axis is far too skewed for him. If one might put so. I wanted to ask Shankar, do you see Nadal doing this, like just taking a break, not injured as it is? Taking a break. We discussed this one part saying the more he plays is better, but assuming his injuries have stabilized and he's predominantly injury free, do you see him doing this to prolong his career?
He might. If he takes a break, it'll be at the end of the year because he doesn't do well indoors anyway. And he might choose, you know, somewhere around China and then Paris and London. Well, he'll want to play the year end. But he hasn't done great. I mean, he's reached the finals a couple of times, but he's never been like, you know, in the form that he's been earlier on in the year. And it's possible he might do that. I'm still hopeful that he can find that serve he showed during the clay court season, and that might help him in Cincinnati and the US Open. So, but I think this year he'll play everything he can, because he's both him and Federer are happy to be back, and they will play if they're fit. But maybe a year or two down the line, Nadal could do it. Yeah.
So, yes, so you asked the question.
So I completely agree. I don't think there is a reason for Federer to play clay season at all. It's too much pressure on his body. But I do, I disagree a little bit to be able to say, I do think Nadal will bunk a tournament. And so will Djokovic as well. I think those three are the most likely to do it.
Wait, one sec. When you say bunk a tournament, do you mean a slam?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't understand why we're saying for Federer it's okay to. I mean, he's on 18, right? We completely agree that physically it's too much for him on clay. Right, Nadal's on 15, right? So I don't think, I mean, for him, obviously, if he's fit, it works. I think he plays every single French Open till he retires, obviously, or till he's like 60. But I think he'll set up for that for sure. He will open at the Australian Open because it's hotter conditions. It's definitely meant for his kind of gameplay, hotter conditions. You know, it makes the ball move faster. I don't think the US Open, and obviously I completely agree with you in terms of, I think he's going to bunk the indoor tournaments as long as it doesn't hamper his rankings too much. But I think he will play the first three. I think Federer will play Australian, Wimbledon, and the US Open. And I think Djokovic will also definitely do the Australian Open and the US Open. I think those three can still do it. I agree partially to be able to say, Murray is not at that stage, but he's also 30, right? I mean, I think he'll show up for Wimbledon, definitely. I think that's his best chance of winning it any which way. But I think they will, overall, I agree with you to be able to say they'll miss out on a lot of the smaller tournaments, maybe a couple of Masters as well. But I do think a year, maybe 2 years from now, all three of them will have to adjust their schedule.
Okay, I think Djokovic is the only player in the world who's beaten Nadal at the French as well as beaten Federer at Wimbledon. And I think he's at his best. He's good enough to do both. And if he gets over this injury hump and also his motivation issues, I really don't see him. I've said what I say. I think they'll play the slams, all of them.
Yeah, okay. Imagine how it must feel terrible to be anywhere between the ages of 20 and 25 right now. It must be horrible for all of these guys. There's
it's up to them to beat them, right? I mean, you look at what Zverev is doing. Somebody else, you know, they have to step up. Dimitrov, Raonic, Monfils, Songa, Burdick, they've all been disappointing. They've all come up against these guys and they've fallen short all of their records. I mean, Burdick against Djokovic, what is it, 25-2, I think, and he beat him this time when he was injured.
He's the worst tennis player I've seen in a long time. He's just, I have no hope for him. If we bash Raonic, I think Burdick is even more off.
Well, I think Burdick is actually more consistent than Raonic. So
he's a consistent quarterfinalist, but even Sebastian Grosjean was a consistent quarterfinalist. And that's
exist- what has Raonic done? Raonic has reached one final. That's it, right? He has to do much more to even get the consistency of a Burdick, I think.
Also, Raonic is a little younger. He has some benefit of a couple of years on him. But I just don't think Burdick has any part of his game.
Hasn't Burdick played for 50 years now? Because he always seems to be playing, but that's all he does. He's there. He's like the perfect participation certificate candidate.
Yeah, he's 31. He's 31, so it's not like he's got too many years on him anyway.
Yeah, I think now what applies for Federer doesn't apply for everybody. That's, I think nobody else is expecting to play till 35, 36. I expect Nadal to play two more years at most, I think. I mean, now he's fit, but he's always just one ground stroke away from getting injured again. So, see how it goes. I mean, as long as he's fit, let him play. This US Open is a real opportunity, so let's see.
I feel like it's only a year more for Nadal. Unless he obviously picks and chooses and does all this other stuff.
Yeah, I can't see him doing that. Not until the slams get over, at least. like I said, end of the year show.
Okay. Fine. I think we have discussed enough that we said 30 minutes and we are almost now at, what, 50 minutes? So, maybe next pod we'll see if we can do something before the US Open. If not, obviously we'll have our, could say, mid-tournament review. But till then, anything, Shankar, you want to plug? Anything you're writing by chance on tennis?
Yeah, I do have a couple of posts planned. One is, I'm having this big discussion with all these Federer fans as to whether Federer is the GOAT or not. And they have arguments for and against him.
Is it opinion or stats-based?
It's both. It's only stats-based. But they feel that, unlike Michael Phelps or Usain Bolt, Federer is not an unquestionable GOAT. And so even though I'm not in the Federer fan club, I think he's done enough to earn the GOAT title. So I'm just trying to articulate that and put it down.
Maybe you're saying across sports?
No. Tennis GOAT, not across sports.
Got it. Sorry. Oh, okay. Understood.
Maybe Bijan, something for us to discuss on the next part then. So,
we can do that, yeah?
Assuming Shankar does indeed write, because he lots of times tells me you'll write. But that's what he tells me.
Yeah, there's never enough ink in my pen.
So we're going to see. But Bijan, anything from your side? Anything you? I saw you were busily collecting stats this morning for football. But other than that, anything you're up to?
No, nothing. Nothing too exciting in my life right now. Just a ton load of work and then, you know, the usual.
Oh, Bijan's life is like birdie in a tournament.
Oh my God, that's harsh. That's harsh on Bird. Bird has had a very good career. I think he's won like $25-30 million.
So Bijan should be happy.
Yeah, he should. Exactly.
You could have called me anyone. Anybody else. You could have called me like Janko Tumsarovic if you want. But just not Bird. I just have such hate for him.
Saw him at the Barclays Finals against Nishikori. He plays superbly. I mean, the margins are very small. It's mental. It's all in the head against those guys.
He's such a crybaby. I saw him when he came for the ATP in India ages ago. And it just put me off then because he was such a whiner. And he lost to that Russian chap, Dmitry Tursunov. Yes, it was ages ago, Mumbai ATP final played at the CCI. And I've hated him since because he's such a crybaby on court. Such a crybaby.
Wow. Wow, you are merciless, I tell you.
He's an absolute guy.
He's not the worst. He's all right.
Unless he's implying that I've tried maybe in the past. So.
No. I'm just saying, it sounds like you saw him when he was 20. Poor guy. I mean, he's played for 11 years. Federer broke rackets when he was young. You move on, right? I guess he was a brat. I couldn't stand him when he was young. And then he became the senior statesman of cricket. Of tennis, sorry. So, yeah.
Yeah, but you said players move on. Burdich doesn't want to move on beyond quarterfinals.
I think Burdich has found the best to play 4 matches, win this much money, perfect, you know. And then go to the next tournament, do it again.
Yeah.
Pretty unfair to him. He just doesn't have the game to beat these guys. That's what it is.
I think we should close the pod, guys, now before it gets ugly.
I think we finished our hardcore preview 25 minutes ago.
But we'll catch up soon, guys. Again, great pod. Good. We actually went off agenda and it got far more interesting. We should do right. this. But till next time, any feedback, listeners, please do send across anything you want us to discuss during the French Open. We'll be more than happy to discuss. But till next time. US Open, we'll be more than happy to discuss. But till next time, goodbye.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found.
LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.